second quote that had been carefully written with what she guessed was an indigo-inked fountain pen. The phrase was from the English poet William Ernest Henley. "Imagine these words, infusing the deepest and most unstained part of your soul. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." The masters and the geniuses and the heroes of civilization all lived hard lives, expanded the billionaire. They trained tough. They played through pain, to borrow a term a lot of superstar athletes use these days. They pushed their potential fiercely. They were ambitious, ceaseless, and ferocious when it came to the complete capitalization of their grandest potential. The Latin root of the word passion means to suffer. These women and men suffered for their visions, ideals, and aspirations. They suffered for the increase of their skill and sacrificed for the realization of their prowess. They endured enormous anguish as they advanced their crafts and abandoned their temptations. And I must tell you, these illustrious performers also suffered for the state of the world. Playing small with your promise demotes our world, you know? Because the planet becomes a poorer place without your greatness in it. Suddenly the billionaire fell to his knees. He lay flat on the floor and closed his eyes, folding his arms over his heart. The tycoon then began to snore loudly.
"What the heck are you doing now, brother?"
asked the artist, appearing both confused and amused.
"Voluntary discomfort," was the speedy reply. More snoring. "I want my teddy bear," he cried, "and my jammies."
Stone Riley then began to suck his thumb. "He's unreal," laughed the entrepreneur, clearly entertained by yet another stunt of this maverick industrialist. One could see the billionaire was now smiling, apparently impressed with his comedic skills, as well as his unusual ability to make a teaching point. Remaining on the ground, he said, "The single best way to build your willpower is to voluntarily put yourself into conditions of discomfort. The Spellbinder calls these strengthening scenarios. When I was much younger, and my ability to command myself to do what I needed to do when I didn't feel like doing it was much weaker, I'd give in to my lesser urges so easily. My self-discipline muscles were very flabby because I wasn't exercising them. The Spellbinder knew I needed to become a lot stronger so I could install the 5 a.m. routine in a way that stayed with me my whole career. So he had me actively put myself into situations of hardship, and it worked like magic."
"What kind of situations?" asked the artist.
"Once a week, I slept on the floor."
"You're serious?" quizzed the entrepreneur. "Really?"
"Absolutely," the billionaire confirmed. "And I began taking cold showers every morning. Twice a week I'd fast, like so many of the most accomplished women and men of the world have done to capitalize on and manifest their primal power. It's remarkable how much time I'd save during the fasting windows when I wouldn't eat, and striking how clear my thinking would be and how much energy I'd have. Oh, and when I'd be at my loft in Zurich to promote my toughness and grit, I'd do some hard winter training by running in the snow with only a t-shirt and a pair of shorts on."
The billionaire stood up.
"It's exactly what I've been suggesting since we got to the Taj Mahal. You have the capacity for world-class self-control. Science confirms it. The real key is to push your brain to develop new neural pathways and to force your willpower muscles to flex and stretch, intentionally working these natural resources up to their highest level. This is how anyone can become so strong, courageous, and undefeatable that no matter what obstacles they face and difficulties they experience, they continue on their quest to meet their glorious goals. Why do you think Navy SEALs and members of the SAS, true willpower warriors, actively expose themselves to such potentially spirit-crushing scenarios? All those long runs in the rain, with heavy backpacks on, crawling through thick mud in the middle of the night, eating brutal food, and living in a Spartan setting, confronting their fears by performing tests like jumping into the ocean from cliffs backwards with blindfolds on, or enduring exercises involving psychological degradation, so they train themselves to transcend what most limits them. Look, cats, bravery and the capacity to do the difficult things that are necessary for the fullest expression of your greatness isn't a divine blessing. Nope, not at all. It's a voluntary practice. Toughness and a will of iron takes devotion. So I very much suggest you begin to suffocate your demons, slay your dragons, and hug your monsters by doing more demanding things. This is one of the surest routes to masterful achievement, and a private life you'll be ever so proud of at the end. You know, this makes me think of the Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw. Boy, did that dude have a cool beard, the billionaire said awkwardly. Ever seen it? He kept on.
I have not, the artist responded.
You should. It's gnarly, the mogul noted.
He then snapped his fingers 8 times. After this, an unknown voice bellowed from somewhere within the mausoleum. The reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man. The voice grew silent. George Bernard Shaw wrote that in his play Man and Superman, a 4-act drama that he produced in 1903. All I'm trying to say is this. When it comes to fulfilling your gifts, talents, admirable ambitions, and instinct to change the world in whatever way most resonates with you, never, ever be reasonable with yourself. The billionaire paused, and then did something his 2 students had not seen anyone do before. He kissed the area of flesh between the index finger and thumb of his left hand. You gotta love yourself before you can lift the world, by the way, he muttered with a grin before proceeding with his mentoring.
Inspiring, the artist admitted, what George Bernard Shaw said.
Research proves that training yourself so your willpower becomes maximized is one of the crowning achievements of an epic life, the billionaire continued. The Welsh explorer Henry Morton Stanley observed that self-control is more indispensable than gunpowder. Definitely inspiring, the entrepreneur echoed. Look, said the billionaire, it's such a myth that celebrated athletes and legendary artists and revered statesmen and stateswomen had more natural willpower than the rest of us. That's just a big lie. What's real, he declared, is that these exceptionalists began as ordinary people, and through relentless practice and constant drilling to wire in excellent daily habits, their power to manage themselves against their cravings and temptations grew stronger, until the culture perceived them as superhumans.
Small, daily, seemingly insignificant improvements, when done consistently over time, yield staggering results, commented the artist, happily reciting the valuable brain tattoo that he'd embraced on this wondrous journey.
He reached over and grasped the hand of the entrepreneur.
That's right, acknowledged the billionaire. What looks to the human eye like invisible and infinitesimal optimizations around your willpower, when performed daily, are what make you into a Michelangelo, or a Da Vinci, or a Disney, or a Chopin, or a Coco Chanel, or a Roger Bannister, or a Pele, or a Marcus Aurelius, or a Copernicus over extended periods of training. The true geniuses all started out as ordinary people, but they practiced building up their strength so much and so often that showing up at world class became automated. Here's another brain tattoo the Spellbinder taught me. Legendary performers practice being spectacular for so long that they no longer remember how to behave in non-spectacular ways.
So, practically speaking, where do we start? The entrepreneur asked. Because I know both of us want a lot more self-discipline and to have excellent habits that last a lifetime, especially getting up at 5 a.m.
Follow me, instructed the industrialist.
Mr. Riley led them down a corridor of the monument, past a series of dim rooms and into a small chamber. In one corner sat a blackboard. The billionaire picked up a piece of chalk and proceeded to draw this diagram, which is found on the enhancement.
This simple model is based on the latest studies on how habits are formed, he began. Your starting point is to create some kind of a trigger, to embed the early rising ritual into your mornings. This could be as simple as having an old-school alarm clock next to your bed that goes off at 5 a.m. When we get to Rome, I'll explain why you shouldn't have any technology in your bedroom.
Rome? The entrepreneur and the artist exclaimed at the same time. The billionaire ignored them.
Once you've got the trigger of your alarm clock in place, the next step, as you can see from my diagram, is to run the routine you want to encode.
So we just get out of bed, right? Queried the entrepreneur.
Yep, said the billionaire. It sounds obvious, but jump straight out of bed before your reasoning mind, the prefrontal cortex, can give you a bunch of excuses about why you should go back to sleep. It's in this very moment that by getting out of bed, you build the early rising neural circuit in your brain through the power of neuroplasticity. And remember, brain pathways that fire together wire together into a potent neural highway over time. It's in the very instant when you're faced with staying on the mattress, or standing up and starting your morning in a great way, that you have the chance to make your willpower stronger. It's uncomfortable at the start, I know.
All change is hard at first, messy in the middle, and gorgeous at the end, interrupted the artist, reinforcing another of the spellbinder's brain tattoos.
Yes, agreed the billionaire. The next step of the four-part pattern to program in a new ritual is to make sure you have a preset reward in place. The reward is what kickstarts and then grows your drive to get the new habit done. Always use the power of rewards for the advancement of your triumphs. So, let's assume you do what you know to be right instead of following what's easy and sprint out of bed fast as soon as the alarm goes off. I'll explain exactly what to do during your victory hour from 5 to 6 a.m. when I walk you through the 20-20-20 formula.
Man, are you ever going to teach it to us? The artist interrupted again. He wasn't being rude. If you were in that chamber with those three, you'd sense that he only spoke that way because he was so interested in the 5 a.m. method. That's all.
The 20-20-20 formula is the subject of tomorrow morning's coaching session, the billionaire offered with the utmost grace. For now, let's stay centered on the third step. You need to set up a reward. That's what the eminent researchers on willpower tell us is essential to create behaviors that stick. Your reward for rising with the sun could be a nice piece of dark chocolate for dessert at lunch. It could be taking a nap later in the day, another favorite rite of the planet's greatest creatives. It could be treating yourself to the book you've been wanting to buy for your library. You can figure out what feels right for you.
Got it, said the entrepreneur. She was now sure that all this information would significantly elevate her business game and dramatically uplift her mindset, heartset, healthset, and soulset, leading her into a truly excellent life.
Good. That brings us to the final point in the pattern, said the billionaire as he touched the piece of chalk to the word repetition on the blackboard in that room of the Taj Mahal. The way to annihilate the weakest impulses of your lower self and to free yourself of the cravings and temptations that are blocking your best is through ceaseless repetition of the new behavior you're working hard to install. The word that comes to mind here is steadfast. Be steadfast in your commitment to remaining a lifelong member of the 5 a.m. club. Be absolutely dedicated and excuseless in following through on this life-altering self-promise. Each time you follow through, you'll deepen the relationship with your sovereign self. Each time you rise at dawn, you'll purify your character, fortify your willpower, and magnify the fires of your soul. I guess what I'm trying to help you two wonderful people appreciate is that the real measure of your majesty is shown not in your outer moments before an audience, but in the soft and early light of lonely practice. You become undefeatable in the world by what you do when no one's watching.
I've read a fair amount about championship sports teams, said the entrepreneur. Really helped me build superb squads at my company. And if there's one thing I've learned, it's that what took the winning team to victory was less how they played in the last seconds of a close final game, and more how disciplined they were at practice.
Exactly, agreed the billionaire. The brilliant moves in the last seconds of the championship match were automatic, the result of tireless hours of repetition of those splendid moves during training.
Cool point, the artist thought to himself.
I want to get to one remaining learning model this morning before I let you cats go. One that will make it incredibly clear how installing a habit follows a 66-day process. Yet before I do, I did want to share a few more fast, practical points on self-discipline.
Great, the artist replied. Today's lesson has been big for me. I know it'll help me beat procrastination, and I'm sure it'll improve the quality of my art. And I've already been making progress on calibrating my physical fitness.
He has, agreed the entrepreneur with a wink.
Well, just remember that willpower weakens once it gets tired. Scientists call the condition ego depletion. See, you wake up each morning with a full battery of self-control. That's why I want you to do the activities that are most important to the rise of your inner empires at the time when your capacity is strongest, at 5 a.m. Here's the thing. As you go through your day, going to meetings, checking messages, and performing tasks, your ability to self-regulate decreases, and so does your capability to handle temptations and manage weak impulses. The fact that human discipline muscles get tired from all the decision fatigue explains why so many massively successful people end up doing something foolish that destroys their careers. They gave in to the urge that causes their downfall, because all day long they were making important decisions. By the time it was evening, they had no willpower left in their battery to manage the craving.
Super fascinating, remarked the entrepreneur. This explains a lot.
So the key is rest and recovery of the self-control muscle, explained the billionaire.
Never allow it to get too tired.
Your willpower really is weakest when you are most tired.
Key awareness to build on here.
We make our worst decisions and our lowest choices when we're exhausted. So don't allow yourself to get exhausted, period. I have a powerful mentoring session on how the best in the world protect priceless assets like their willpower through the lost art of personal regeneration planned for you later.
Mr. Riley began to cough, a concerning, throaty cough, not an insignificant one.
Oh, he added, regaining his composure. Please also know the research also supports the idea that external order increases your discipline. That's why Steve Jobs made sure the workplace at Next was minimalist and painted all white when he was there. Mess lowers your self-control as well as steals your cognitive bandwidth.
Maybe that's why so many so-called geniuses wear the same uniform every day, the artist commented. They want to keep order and structure in their lives. And they understand that each morning we wake up with a limited amount of willpower as well as mental focus. So, rather than wasting these valuable gifts by spreading them over many trivial choices like what to wear and what to eat, they automate as many basic things as possible so they can concentrate their highest powers on just a few important activities. Now I'm getting how geniuses become geniuses even more. If all I did every day was my art and only a handful of other things, I wouldn't suffer from decision fatigue, as you call it. And that would mean I wouldn't waste so much time in the evening and make so many bad choices as the day ends, like watching stupid TV shows, eating too much junk food, and sipping too much tequila.
Okay, declared the billionaire. You folks clearly now know all change is hard at first, messy in the middle, and gorgeous at the end. That insight should be well on its way to settling in as a default belief of your mindset. Now, let's deconstruct that powerful brain tattoo of the Spellbinder into a potent model which explains the three phases every habit installation goes through, so you have even more firepower to lock in the regime of rising at dawn. You'll absolutely love what you're about to learn. Promise me you'll turn up the volume of your listening as we go through this? Then we'll call it a morning.
We promise, the entrepreneur and the artist expressed together.
Pinky promise? Asked the billionaire, putting out a little finger.
Yes, responded the entrepreneur, as she locked pinkies with her mentor.
Yes, agreed the artist, as he did the same.
Terrific, enthused the magnate.
One of the security guards who had led the three companions into the structure walked in and pulled a chart out of a backpack. He shone his flashlight onto it, so all could see what had been printed on it. The teaching framework that came into view, the Habit Installation Protocol, is found on the enhancement.
On the coding of any new habit, you'll move through an initial period of destruction, said Mr. Riley, as he pointed to the first phase on the diagram. Keep at it, and you'll definitely move ahead into the second stage of the process, where new neural pathways are formed and the real installation begins. This is the messy middle. Finally, as you stick with your practice of making any fresh routine your normal way of being, you'll arrive at the final and wonderful stage, integration. The whole exercise takes approximately 66 days, according to the research data of University College London. The Spellbinder, in his teachings, calls this powerful fact the 66-day minimum. 66 days of training to make a new habit, yours. So don't quit after a few days or a few weeks, or even after 2 months. As it relates to becoming a member of the 5 a.m. club, stick with your self-promise for at least 66 days, no matter what. Do this one thing, and the remainder of your life will be exponentially better. This I promise you from my heart, said the billionaire. See, all change is hard at first. That's why the Spellbinder named stage one destruction. If it wasn't difficult at the start, it wouldn't be real change. It's supposed to be hard because you're rewriting the past patterns of your mind and destroying old ways of operating, and rewiring past programs of your heart and emotions. Do you know why the space shuttle uses more fuel in the 60 seconds after liftoff than it uses over the entire orbit around the Earth?
It needs to overcome the powerful forces of gravity after it takes off, the artist answered confidently.
Exactly, the billionaire affirmed. It requires a large amount of fuel to overcome those initial forces and reach escape velocity. But once it does, momentum kicks in, and the craft just goes. The first phase of creating any new habit, the destruction stage, is precisely like this. You need to overcome your deeply ingrained habits, dominant rituals, and traditional states of performance. You need to rise above your own forces of gravity until your escape velocity kicks in. It's so challenging at the beginning. I'm not going to lie to you. You both have done very well getting up at 5 a.m. over the mornings you've been with me. But you will hit a wall over these first 22 days while you're in phase one. Nothing wrong, just part of the habit installation process anyone seeking peak productivity and a richer life must go through. For most people ready to get up before daybreak, each day of this first phase is a hardship. They feel like giving up. They complain that rising early just isn't for them, that they're not built for this routine, and that it's just not worth the pain. My advice is simple. Continue at all costs. Persistency sits at the threshold of mastery. The things that feel hardest are also the ones that are most valuable. Keep remembering that doing difficult things that are very important was how the highest achievers and greatest heroes of our civilization embraced their power. Please also remember this rule. When faced with a choice, always choose the one that pushes you the most, increases your growth, and promotes the unfoldment of your gifts, talents, and personal prowess. So when you feel like quitting, persevere. You'll get to the next stage soon. And understand the negative thoughts, cranky emotions, and strong desires to surrender are a normal part of the process of hardwiring any new regime. The first 22 days are supposed to feel like a mild form of torture. Because stage one is all about the destruction of old ways of being, so that new ones can be set up, right? The entrepreneur asked. Precisely, the billionaire confirmed. And just because you couldn't do something before doesn't mean you can't do it now, he added while nodding in an encouraging way. I need to repeat what I said, so you absolutely lock it in. If it wasn't hard initially, it wouldn't be real and valuable change. Society has programmed us to think that because it's difficult at first, something bad is happening. That we should stop what we're doing and return to the safe house of our former normal. Zero growth and evolution toward legendary in that mode of operating? Zero. So true, agreed the entrepreneur. Everyone I know repeats the familiar every day. Okay, maybe not everyone, but definitely most people. Same thoughts, same behaviors, and the same moves.
The truth is not that they can't change, said Mr. Riley. It's just that they didn't make the commitment to improve and then stay with the process long enough for their neurobiology as well as their psychology, physiology, emotionality, and spirituality to work its natural wonders. Everything you now find easy, you once found hard, you know?
The billionaire then asked for the security guard's flashlight and focused it onto the part of the learning model related to the second stage of routinization.
Thanks, Krishna, he added. See here, all change is messy in the middle. Stage two is called installation, because it's like you're going through an interior renovation of sorts. Former foundations need to be torn down so that much better ones can be put up. This stage will make you feel confused, stressed out, and frustrated. You'll feel like quitting even more and dismissing your decision to join the 5 a.m. club as a terrible one. You'll long to go back to staying in your warm bed and counting more sheep. Just know and trust that all is good, very good, actually. And though you can't see it, you're advancing even further in the habituation of making the early rising routine yours for the rest of your life. Things are about to get easier. They really are. You're just going through the second stage of the procedure, and it only feels messy. And it only looks chaotic. The reality is you're growing beautifully and closing in on a whole new grade of performing. In all disorder, there is a secret order, said famed psychologist Carl Jung. So, when you're wiring in this priceless new morning routine, the entire structure of your brain really is in upheaval as you manufacture new neural pathways. Your whole system really is being restructured. You're honestly in seriously unfamiliar territory. Sprouting green shoots, going blue ocean, conquering new territories of self-potential, and accessing higher universes of human optimization. Cortisol, the fear hormone, is elevated at this time, so you'll feel scared a lot of the time. All that's happening within your brain is consuming huge reserves of energy. So you'll be exhausted often at stage two of habit installation. The ancient sages, seers, and philosophers called such a profound personal transformation the dark night of the soul. What was once a caterpillar is messily, yet almost magically, becoming a butterfly. The mystics wrote of deep and real change as a journey involving a series of little deaths. The old you must die, so a better you can be reborn. The Spellbinder says that for you to upgrade to greatness, you must undergo an annihilation of your weakness. Dramatic words, I'll admit, but the guru speaks truthfully. In stage two, sometimes you might even feel like everything's falling apart. But actually all is coming together, even better. Your human perception is often not reality, as you've learned. It's just you seeing the world through a lens. The fact is that the illusion of safety is always so much more deadly than your rise toward personal mastery. Stay in stage two of the process for around 22 days, and just know that unfathomable rewards are coming.
I love all that you just said, interjected the artist. I'll install the early rising ritual for the rest of my life, even if it kills me trying, he promised to himself.
The billionaire grew quiet.
I've been through this shedding and transforming process many, many times. Each time I go for a new habit, or greater skill, or even a more evolved core belief, I go into this death and rebirth cycle. And I need to tell you that it does feel like the end. You'll be so scared at times, tired a lot for a while, and confused by what the dark voice of your ego will say. You'll even feel like you're going crazy sometimes. That's why so few people do this work, and why so few reach the rare air of epic performance and make a worldwide impact on the culture. It's a sport only for outright warriors. It requires enormous courage, immense conviction, and uncommon strength of character. You have all this in you. Just resolve to apply it. As I said, with practice and patience,
It'll all get easier, and eventually, automatic. Okay, cats, spoke the billionaire, as he clapped his hands together like an encouraging football coach. I know you're getting this beautifully, so let's keep jamming. Stick with the process of new habit installation through the breakdown of old patterns, which happens in stage one. Then continue through the formation of new circuitry in your brain, which happens through neuroplasticity, and the manufacturing of better pathways in your emotional core in stage two. Do that, and you'll most certainly reach stage three, the final part of your ascension, integration. Remember, all change is hard at first, messy in the middle, and gorgeous at the end. The billionaire paused, smiled gently, and then touched his toes. He kissed the flesh between his fingers again. Then he went on. This final stage is when it all comes together, he explained, and you get to experience the benefits of your fantastic commitment to being a lifetime member of the 5 a.m. Club. You're nearing the end of the roughly 66-day period required for a human brain and being to encode a routine. So, now it's success time. You've advanced through the initial disruption, you've made it through the dangerousness and chaos of the middle phase, and you've come out the other side stronger, more skilled, and with greater intimacy of your most supreme and invincible nature. You're now the next version of your greatest self, able to bring on a bigger game, influence more people by the glorious power of your example, and be more useful to the world because you've owned more of your primal heroism. All your hard work, sacrifice and suffering, careful consistency and brilliant bravery come together in this stage as the new habit you've been working on integrates at a psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual level, and becomes your new normal. Normal, wondered the artist. Life gets easy. The billionaire suddenly fell to the marble floor of the Taj Mahal and started doing more push-ups. He looked sort of like a boxer training for the main event. What the heck are you doing now? Questioned the entrepreneur, amused. He's crazier than I ever imagined, she thought. I do love him. The primary purpose of life is growth. To be continuously pushing yourself to materialize more of your potential. My daily push-ups not only keep me in a state of continual optimization toward world class, it's also a tremendous way to keep myself feeling young, happy, and alive. Boredom kills the human spirit. The industrialist stood up. For the A player, the top of one mountain is the bottom of the next. The installation of one great new habit brings on the outstanding opportunity to begin the next. I do 1,000 push-ups a day, you know? Superb exercise, one of the best. So simple, keeps me lean and chiseled, good for my core, and the exercise also recruits my glutes, the billionaire said with an awkward expression. But doing 1,000 push-ups a day is also a ritual to remind me to keep going, keep expanding, keep elevating my mindset, heart set, health set and soul set, and escalating my rise to my best. Honestly, I'm not afraid of failing. That's just part of learning to fly. I'm just horrified of not growing. Got you, the entrepreneur said, scribbling frantically on her notepad. The billionaire then moved an index finger across the teaching model and rested it at the area that said, the automaticity point. The exciting fact is that once you arrive at the automaticity point, you no longer need any willpower to get up at 5 a.m. The new regime's implementation into your human operating system is complete. Awakening before dawn becomes second nature, and easy. Here's the real gift from your excellence and devotion over the 66 or so days. The willpower you were using to lay down the early rising habit is now freed up for another world-class behavior, so you have the chance to grow even more productive, prosperous, joyful, and successful. This is the hidden secret of all pro athletes, for example. It's not that they have more self-discipline than the average person. It's just that they capitalized on whatever impulse control they had for 66 days, until the game-winning routines got installed. After that, they redirected their willpower to something else that would improve their expertise. Another practice that would help them lead their field and achieve victory. One habit installation after another habit installation is how the pros play. Over time, their winning behaviors became automated, systematized, institutionalized. Absolutely no effort was required to run them once they got hardwired. And these superstars practice their habits of victory so often, they've arrived at a place where they forgot how to not do them. They got to a point where it was easier to run them than not to run them, right? Commented the entrepreneur. Absolutely correct, responded the billionaire. The artist was excited.
So valuable to me personally and to my work as a painter. And so I completely understand this process fully. Each of the three stages, destruction, installation, and integration, takes about 22 days, right?
Right. And at around the 66-day mark, it locks in as an automatic routine. That's the automaticity point, because habits take around 9 weeks to implement. Don't stop getting up at 5 a.m. after a week. Don't give up when it gets messy in the middle of the process. Stay relentless through the entire exercise, through all its trials and challenges, just like Shah Jahan did as he and his workers constructed the Taj Mahal, building it into one of the wonders of the world. Awesome takes patience, and genius takes time. Stay true in your dedication to carving out an hour for yourself as the sun rises, and while the majority sleeps, to develop your four interior empires that will set you up to realize all the outer ones that your big hearts long to actualize. Do not neglect the call on you to deploy your fullest talents. Magnify your spectacular strengths, multiply your happiness, and discover a paradise of peace within you that no outer event can ever reduce. This, my friends, is how you become undefeatable, unbreakable, and a true master of your domain, as well as a wonder of the world in your own unique way.
Love it, beamed the entrepreneur.
Bravo, totally helpful.
Explains why so few people have the habits necessary to achieve mastery. They just don't stay with their initial commitment long enough for it to work. They could, but they don't.
Yep, agreed the billionaire. That's why information and education, learning and growing are so vitally important. The majority just don't know this life-changing model and the practical insights that I've revealed to you around it. And because they don't know, they can't apply. And knowledge unimplemented leaves potential undercapitalized. We're all built for triumph, in whatever way we choose to define it. Sadly, most of us have never been schooled in the philosophy and methodology that the Spellbinder taught to me. The same teaching I'm now paying forward to you. You just need to make sure you tell as many people as possible about the Spellbinder's work. Please. This way, we can help people leave the darkness of apathy, mediocrity, and scarcity, and find their inherent power to do astonishing things with the rest of their lives. God, we need to make this world a better, healthier, safer, and more loving place.
For sure, the entrepreneur and the artist promised together. The entrepreneur then stopped to take in the unforgettable nature of the scene that enveloped her. She was standing next to a man she'd unexpectedly fallen in love with over a bizarre, beautiful, and marvelous adventure. She was standing inside one of the seven wonders of the world, located in India, a nation she'd always longed to visit for the breathtaking sights, exotic delights, and the country's extraordinarily special citizens. She paused to consider what had unfolded back in her usual world. The manipulations, the thievery, the disloyalties, and the treachery. In that moment, she laughed. Not some forced laugh that so many of us hear at business meetings where good people in quiet fear, wear social masks in an effort to fit in, appear powerful and look cool. No, this was the palpable joy of a person who just discovered some of the true treasures of a life wisely lived. The entrepreneur, in that instant, realized how blessed she was. The takeover attempt would resolve itself, since life always has a way of working things out for the best. Sure, she'd learned not to repress the natural feelings of anger, disappointment, and sometimes sadness that were arising within her from time to time when she'd think about the situation. That was just her being human and real, and even brave, not weak. Yet, she also now understood there were things more important than wealth, acclaim, and fame, and that many financially rich people are actually desperately poor. Nothing's as valuable as my happiness. Nothing's as priceless as my peace of mind, the businesswoman thought. She'd found love. She was still in excellent health. She had so many things to be grateful for. Two eyes to see the splendors of this wonderful world. Two legs to explore it all. Food on her table each night, at a time when billions have empty bellies. And a roof over her head for ample shelter. She had wise books to read in her library, work that fed her creativity, and as the billionaire said so often, an opportunity to achieve outright mastery, not only to benefit herself, but also in service of society. And so, inside that majestic mausoleum that has electrified the inspiration of so many visitors from across the earth, and as the sun rose into the abundant Indian sky, the entrepreneur found it in her heart to do something we all need to do more of. She forgave. She let go of her hostility toward her investors. She released her resentments for her detractors. And she let go of every single one of her weighty disappointments. Life is too short to take things too seriously. And at the end of her life, what would matter most would not be whether those venture capitalists had ownership of her enterprise, but who she became as a human being, and the quality of the craft she produced, and how many people she helped, and how much she laughed, and how well she lived. The billionaire was right. Every human being does the best they can do based on the level of consciousness they are currently at, and on the grade of true power they can command. And if her investors had known better, they would have done better. These people generated pain and suffering for her, because at a deep and subconscious level, they are in pain. And because they are suffering, those who hurt others silently loathe themselves. Yes, this sort of higher way of seeing things is not so common in our civilization. But maybe that's why our world is filled with so many wars, so much danger, and so much hatred. Just maybe, she considered, these corporate bandits were her teachers, sent by life's better nature to push her to the edge so she would reach such a place of disheartenment and despair that she'd have to change. And learned to soar. Just maybe all she'd experienced was, as the billionaire taught, precious preparation for who she needed to become, to fulfill the potential of her most luminous gifts, and realize the promise of her most high destiny, in a way that benefited humanity. And, perhaps, it's when we face losing everything that we come to know our grandest selves. This strange, quirky, and most genuine mentor in front of her, Mr. Stone Riley, was pouring his heart out, explaining how the simple yet not initially easy daily discipline of joining the 5 a.m. club could, and indeed would, transform the productivity, prosperity, and well-being of any person who applied the method. He'd kept each of the lofty vows he had made at their bizarre first encounter, at the Spellbinders Mesmerizing Conference. He'd shown himself to be a titan, not only of industry, but also of integrity and decency. We need more of his kind, she thought. Women and men who are pure leaders. People who influence not through the strength of a large title and by the threat of a big position, but via the power of their characters, the nobility of their expertise, the compassion in their hearts,
and by their unusual dedication to leaving everyone they meet better than they found them. Leaders run less by the selfish addictions of the ego, and more by the selfless dictates of our greater wisdom.
The entrepreneur remembered the words of the poet Maya Angelou. My wish for you is that you continue. Continue to be who you are, to astonish a mean world with your acts of kindness.
The instructions of Mother Teresa also entered the mind of the entrepreneur in that instant. If everyone would only clean their own doorstep, the whole world would be clean. And so, on that very special early morning, inside one of the splendid monuments of the world, she not only forgave, she made a pact with herself, understanding as never before, that optimizing oneself is the best way to improve the state of the world, and that developing the genius within was the fastest way to uplift her relationship with everything externally. The entrepreneur forged an agreement. She made herself a promise not only to never again consider taking her own life. She also pledged that every day, for the remainder of her days, she'd rise at 5 a.m. and give herself the gift of that victory hour free from all trivial diversions, unimportant stimulations, and unnecessary complications, so that she could continue. Continue calibrating her mindset, purifying her heart set, fortifying her health set, and escalating her soul set. She would demand this of herself no matter what excuses and rationalizations the weaker and scared part of her personality would argue for, because she deserved to experience her greatness, and because she hoped to be one of the heroes that we all are waiting for.
Anywho, the billionaire shouted, inappropriately loudly, 3 final and ultra-practical tactics to help you lock in new habits. I've spent a lot of time on this subject because it's so absolutely essential to your success. I'll quickly walk you through 3 techniques that research confirms will help the 5 a.m. club morning routine stick. Then we're out of here. He pulled out the flashlight and focused its rays on the ceiling of the chamber. The following brain tattoos slowly appeared. Number 1, to make a habit last, never install it alone. Number 2, the teacher learns the most. Number 3, when you most feel like quitting is the time you must continue advancing. The billionaire smiled again. Pretty simple instructions, right? Profoundly simple, because they're simply profound. The first point will remind you that rituals run deepest when performed in a group. That's why being a member of the 5 a.m. club is so potent. You're not installing this morning routine alone. We're all in this together. And my sincere wish is that, when you cats get home, you bring as many people as you can. People who are ready to rise early so they can do world-class work and craft phenomenal lives into the club. Support groups have long been a proven way to make improvements that last. So, leverage this concept brilliantly, please. The billionaire coughed. Then he rubbed his chest as if he were in pain. He pretended no one noticed and advanced the dialogue. The second point will remind you to actually teach the philosophy and methodology you've been learning from me. As you do so, your own understanding of the material will deepen even more superbly. In many ways, educating others on all I've shared will be a gift you provide to yourself. I've never looked at it that way, observed the entrepreneur. It's truth, informed the billionaire. And the final line you see on this ceiling is the most important. Remember that persistency is necessary for all forms of mastery. In that moment you feel you can't go further, lies an enormous opportunity to forge an entirely new level of willpower. When you feel you can't continue, progress a little longer. Your self-discipline muscle will be amplified considerably, and the degree of your self-respect will increase vastly. And few things are as essential to exponential productivity, leading your field and the creation of a life you adore, as raising the appreciation you have for yourself. Stunningly, and without any clue about what was coming, the billionaire flipped over and held a headstand.
With eyes closed, he recited a phrase from Gerald Sykes, the writer and philosopher that went like this. Any solid achievement must of necessity take years of humble apprenticeship and estrangement from most of society. You two amazing humans deserve to materialize your best selves and realize epic achievements, the billionaire said as he returned to Earth. Do not betray the powers that sleep within you by staying too late in a soft bed that keeps you sedated. The great men and women of the world became so not because they lounged glamorously under the covers, but because they set sublime ambitions that they then proceeded to do, even as the majority called them crazy. World class takes time and commitment and sacrifice and patience, like the Taj Mahal shows us, and heroism never occurs in a single season. Encode the 5 a.m. habit. Stay with the process indefinitely, and move ahead when you most feel like stopping. Doing so will make you a legend, and seal your fate as someone who is worthy of worldwide influence. Stone Riley then stood up, hugged his two students, and disappeared down a marble passageway. Chapter 13. The 5 a.m. Club Learns the 20-20-20 Formula. Early in the morning, when you are reluctant in your laziness to get up, let this thought be at hand. I am rising to do the work of a human being. Marcus Aurelius, Roman Emperor. Rome is in my veins. Its energy courses through my blood, and its unique type of magic resets my spirit, thought the billionaire as his jet taxied along the tarmac of that city's private airport. The song Magnolia by Italian music group Negrita pulsed through the speakers of the aircraft as the tycoon swayed his taut shoulders to the beat. The fierce pride, fantastic passions, and glorious hearts of the Romans inspire me so much, he affirmed to himself. The way the light falls on Trinità dei Monti, the church that crowns the Spanish steps, never fails to lift my soul, and often brings tears into my eyes. The exquisite food, including the mozzarella di bufala, cacio e pepe, amatriciana, and carbonara, along with the fire-cooked abbacchio, feeds my desire to maximize the enjoyment of my life. And the painstakingly handcrafted architecture in this open-air museum of a city, where I love to walk in the rain, speaks to both the warrior as well as the poet within me, the magnate reflected, as his jet neared the gate. The billionaire had spent many of the finest years of his fantastic, though far from perfect life, in Rome, staying at an apartment in the historical center on Via Vittoria. Zurich and his other homes were the places he'd go mostly to work on projects and manage his global commercial pursuits. But Rome, well, Rome was to fuel his sense of awe and to nourish his appetite for joy. Inhaling the fragrance of gardenias at springtime and taking long treks past the temple that sits at the lake in the park called Villa Borghese were two of his favorite things in life. Rising at 5 a.m., before Rome's dense traffic could stifle some of its magnificence, and riding his mountain bike past the Trevi Fountain, up to Monti and by the Colosseum, and finally over to Piazza Navona, to just sit and embrace the marvelousness of the church in that exalted square, reminded him of the brilliance that only early morning brings. Much more than his wealth, such experiences made him feel prosperous and alive. You should know that the greatest love of his life hailed from Rome. The billionaire met her in an English bookstore just off Via dei Condori, the fabulous street where Italy's iconic fashion houses have their flagship stores. Though he was in his late 30s, the Titan was still a bachelor at that first encounter, something of a playboy and a man known for his taste in the finer pleasures of the world. He still remembered the book he sought her help to find, Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach,
that wonderfully transformational novel about a seagull who knew he was made to fly higher than the flock, and embarked on an unforgettable journey to make that inner knowing real. Vanessa put her hands on a copy quickly, was exceedingly polite, yet frustratingly aloof, and then moved on to help another customer. It took the billionaire over a year of visiting that cramped bookshop with books arranged on old wooden shelves that lined the time-worn walls for this young woman to agree to have dinner with him. The billionaire's quest was driven by her under-the-radar kind of beauty, her ardent intelligence, her bohemian personal style, and her awkward laugh that made him feel as happy as a family of bees in a huge honey pot. They were married in the enchanting seaside town of Manapoli, in the southern Italian region of Puglia. "What a special day that was," the Baron mused wistfully. "The music that rang through the main square as we all danced with wild abandon, under the melting glow of a full moon. The farm-fresh burrata cheese, the orecchiette pasta made by the chef's grandmother. The townspeople joining the lively party, displaying their boundless Italian hospitality by bringing bottles of homemade Negramaro and Primitivo wine as wedding gifts. The whole experience still touched him considerably. The billionaire's relationship with Vanessa had been both sensational and volatile, as in many epic love stories. Sometimes, often, actually, intense romantic connection raises deep-rooted pain. With that special person, we finally feel safe to take off our social armor and show our truest selves. And so, they get to see us in the fullness of our wonder, passion, and light. Yet that also brings intense glimpses of the shadow side we all have, the side that develops from the hurts we've had as we've lived. In The Prophet, Khalil Gibran wrote, "When love beckons to you, follow him, though his ways are hard and steep. Though the sword hidden among his pinions may wound you, though his voice may shatter your dreams as the north wind lays waste the garden, all these things shall love do unto you, so that you may know the secrets of your heart." Yet, despite the turbulent nature of their marriage, the billionaire and his statuesque wife made it work for decades. Though she had passed away suddenly many years earlier, he never remarried. He wouldn't allow himself to fall in love again, preferring to concentrate on growing his business empire, expanding his philanthropic pursuits, and enjoying the genuinely lovely life he'd earned alone. The mogul took out his wallet and slowly removed a creased photograph of Vanessa. He stared at it, transfixed by the image. Then he started coughing again, vigorously. "You okay, boss?" inquired one of the pilots from the cockpit. The billionaire remained silent, looking at the photo. The entrepreneur and the artist had flown to Rome a few days earlier and had been mesmerized by the sights, splendor, and rarities of the eternal city. With hands locked together, taking in the energy and beauty of Rome, they traversed the cobblestone streets previously walked by great builders and noble emperors. Today was the day they had waited a long time for. This morning, they'd learned the 20-20-20 formula that rested at the core of the 5 a.m. method. The two students would be taught with granularity precisely what to do within the victory hour, that window of opportunity that runs between 5 and 6 a.m., so they'd consistently enjoy amazing days. Today they would discover, in intimate detail, how to use their mornings well to create a world-class existence. As requested by the billionaire, the two stood at the very top of the Spanish Steps. It was precisely 5 a.m. If you stood on the platform under the obelisk that's there and looked down to the steps beneath it, you'd see the exact spot where the mentor and his two students met on this morning. The first rays of the Roman sun kissed Trinità dei Monti as the lovers looked out over this city of such culture.
The early Romans were remarkable for the grandeur of their visions, for the scale of their buildings, and for their otherworldly ability to construct monuments that betrayed engineering reality. The two of them could see St. Peter's Basilica and the tomb of Emperor Augustus, as well as the seven hills that were so central to the protection of the empire that began as a tiny village on the banks of the Tiber River and grew to what now included 40 different countries, spanning Europe, Asia, and Africa. The air was fragrant with a blend of floral notes and smokiness, as if a fire were burning in the far distance.
"Buongiorno," cried a voice amid the tranquility. "Own your morning, elevate your life,"
the billionaire shouted with the kind of enthusiasm you'd hear from Roman soldiers on achieving a crucial victory. Mr. Riley walked into the first embers of the lightfall, smiling a man in a magic of life type of smile. He had chosen to wear a pair of chic Italian sunglasses for this all-important coaching session. He also wore an Italian windbreaker over a black t-shirt with the initials SPQR emblazoned on it, black sweatpants, and orange running shoes.
"Tutto bene?"
he asked cheerfully. "We're good," said the entrepreneur, happily understanding a few words of Italian.
"Really good," offered the artist.
"Big day, cats. Today's lesson to be taught to you by me, your cheese-gulping, tonnarelli pasta-gobbling mentor, is all about the 2020-20 formula. We're finally here. We're finally ready to calibrate your morning routine, so you both materialize your promise for genius and lead a life of limitless joyfulness. You'll so love what you're about to hear. The rest of your life will never be the same," the illustrious industrialist declared.
As the sun slowly ascended, for the first time a tattoo could be seen on the back of the billionaire's left hand. It had numbers on it. They simply read 20, 20, 20. The rays of light congregated over his head to give the appearance of a halo. The entire scene was ethereal. You would have been impressed.
"Is that new?" wondered the artist, showing a clear curiosity. "Didn't notice it before."
"Yep," responded the tycoon. "I had someone in Trastevere do it for me last night. Cool, right?"
spoke the billionaire, appearing as innocent as a newborn.
"Sort of,"
pronounced the artist as he let out a monstrous yawn, then sipped from a takeaway cup of coffee.
"Great coffee here in Italy," he added.
"Well, the tattoo is temporary," admitted the billionaire. "I got it because today's the 2020-20 formula day. It really is one of the most important of all our training days together. I feel blessed to be here with you two. I'm starting to feel we're family now. And to be back in Rome is so incredibly special. I stopped coming here after my wife, Vanessa, passed away. Just hurt too much to be here without her," he confessed, before looking away.
Stone Riley then dug into a pocket of his sweatpants and pulled out a wishbone. He carefully placed the object on one of the steps that had a series of mysterious drawings on it. The billionaire asked his two guests to make a wish, before instructing them to pull it apart as a sign of good luck.
"I brought this to our session this morning not only to create even more great vibes for you cats," continued the billionaire. "I also want you both to remember that a wishbone without a backbone doesn't really get you very far," he explained.
"Sort of the part-time commitment delivers part-time results insight we learned earlier?" queried the artist.
"And the no idea works without doing the work insight," reinforced the entrepreneur as she did a yoga stretch into the increasing sun. "Sort of," replied the billionaire. "I know you both long to lead productive, excellent, happy and meaningful lives. Being a member of the 5 a.m. Club truly is the one habit of all possible habits that will guarantee this mighty ambition comes true. It's the single finest practice I've ever encountered to translate the intentions of living gloriously into an everyday reality. Yes, dreams and desires are just wishbones. Rising before daybreak is your backbone to get them done. The power of getting up early really comes from the daily application of the 20-20-20 formula," the magnate continued. and you're now just a few seconds away from being exposed to this astonishingly potent morning routine.
It really is about time,
said the artist as he put on his own green-lensed sunglasses to shield his eyes from the light which was now beginning to wash into the empty spaces around the Spanish steps and down onto the cobblestone square that features a famous fountain built around Bernini's sculpture of an old boat.
Give me a hug before we get going, people,
bellowed the billionaire affectionately as he embraced the artist and entrepreneur.
Welcome to my beloved Roma,
he added as the song Come un pittore by the group Moda began to play from an open window of a nearby apartment. A curtain hung out of it, flirting with the soft breeze.
Okay, let's rock this piece. Please know that your creativity, productivity, prosperity, performance, and usefulness to the world, as well as the quality of your private life, won't transform by simply rising at 5 a.m. alone. It's not just rising early that makes this regime so powerful. It's what you do over the 60 minutes after you wake up that makes the 5 a.m. club so game-changing. Remember this. Your victory hour gives you one of life's greatest windows of opportunity. As you now know, the way you start your day dramatically influences how it unfolds. Some people get up early, but destroy the value of their morning routine by watching the news, surfing online, scanning social feeds and checking messages. I'm sure you both understand that such behavior comes from the need for a quick pleasure rush of dopamine, an escape from what is truly important. This way of acting causes members of the majority to miss out on doing the things that would allow them to leverage the quietude of this special time to help them maximize greatness so awesome days show up consistently.
And as we create each day, so we craft our life, right?
Asserted the artist, confirming a key piece of information he'd learned on the beach of the billionaire's oceanfront compound.
That's the Day Stacking Foundation. And it's one of the four focuses of history makers that you explained to us. I still remember that model.
Absolutely correct, applauded the billionaire. And I need to say that beginning your day intelligently, healthily, and peacefully isn't only about optimizing your public and private success. It's also about protecting it.
Suddenly, a man driving a horse carriage and dressed as a gladiator rolled through the square, known as Piazza di Spagna, and shouted, "Buongiorno, Mr. Riley," and then continued on his way.
"A dopo," replied the billionaire loud enough for the man to hear. "Gnarly costume, right?" he said to his students.
The billionaire rubbed his fake tattoo and looked toward the Colosseum.
"That man we just saw makes me think of the Auriga, a type of slave in ancient Rome, who would transport important Roman leaders and was chosen for his trustworthiness. Here's the neat thing. Another key job of the Auriga was to stand behind the military general known as the Dux and whisper the words, Memento Homo, carefully into his ear as he placed the laurel crown on his head.
What does that mean? Asked the entrepreneur. Today she dressed in faded jeans, a bright red t-shirt with a V-neck, and white running shoes. Her hair was styled in the ponytail that she liked. She had her bracelets on, and she absolutely radiated optimism.
Memento homo is Latin for remember you are only a man,
the billionaire answered.
The Auriga did this to keep the leader's arrogance in check and to help the leader manage the inevitable invitation to egotism that all great success inescapably brings. The ritual was a profound discipline to ensure the Dux remained monomaniacally focused on his true mission of making himself and the empire he ruled even better, and not diluting all his energies on the amusements and excess that caused dynasties to fall.
You know what? Indicated the artist. I've seen some artistic geniuses blow up their creative empires and destroy their good reputations because they didn't manage their success properly. So I hear you.
Deaf, said the entrepreneur.
I mean definitely, she quickly corrected as she clasped the hand of her new boyfriend. I've seen so many rocket ship companies lose their market share because they fell in love with their winning formula. They lost their fire. They got bloated and cocky. They bought into the faulty belief that because there were long lineups for their excellent products, there would always be long lineups, even without iterating their goods, improving customer service, and ensuring that every single employee continued to raise their leadership performance. So, I hear you too, Mr. Riley.
Awesome, was his one-word reply. As you apply the 20-20-20 formula, always remember to keep improving the way you run it each morning. Stay hungry. Keep a white belt mentality around it, because nothing fails like success. Once you experience how transformational the practice is, it'll be easy to start coasting, and maybe even neglecting a few steps of the process.
The billionaire touched an index finger down to one of the steps. He closed his eyes and quietly recited these words.
It's time to stop being a fugitive from your highest self and accept membership into a new order of ability, bravery, and understanding of the call on your lives to inspire humanity.
He then walked across the stone platform atop the Spanish steps and raised two fingers of his right hand to show the universal sign for peace. Next, he waved an arm in the direction of a man on a seat heating up chestnuts in Piazza di Spagna, near the foot of Via dei Condori. The man wore a gray shirt that had wrinkles over the chest area, navy blue trousers, and yellow running shoes. On seeing the sign, the man immediately stood up and darted through the square, up the steps, three at a time, all the way to the peak where the billionaire was stationed. He lifted his rumpled shirt, revealing a bulletproof vest, and pulled out a laminated sheet of paper from beneath it.
"Here you go, Grande. Good to see you back in Rome, my boss."
The man spoke with a rich Italian accent and a voice as gritty as sandpaper.
"Grazie mille. Molto gentile, Adriano,"
the billionaire said as he kissed the palm of a hand before extending it for a handshake.
"Adriano's on my security team,"
noted Mr. Riley while studying the page that had been presented to him.
"He's one of my best. He grew up in the town of Alba in the Piemonte region of this exceptional nation. You cats like Tartufo?"
"What's that?" queried the artist, looking a little confused by the scenario that had just played out.
"Truffles, baby," enthused the billionaire. "My goodness, they taste incredible. On tagliolini pasta with melted butter drizzled over it. Or when grated over jiggly fried eggs. My, oh my, food of the emperors it is."
The billionaire's eyes were as wide as a prairie while he imagined the meal he was describing. A razor-thin line of drool meandered out of the right corner of his mouth. Yes, a line of drool. Beyond weird, right? Adriano, who had remained in position, discreetly handed his employer a handkerchief. He looked at the entrepreneur and the artist with a glance that seemed to say, "I know he's strange, but we love him too." And then all four people, perched upon that overwhelmingly alluring sight, started to laugh together.
"Have a great morning, boss," Adriano said as he prepared to leave. "I'll meet you in Testaccio this evening. Thank you so much for inviting me to eat with you tonight. Are we eating cacio e pepe as usual?"
"Si," confirmed the billionaire. "A presto."
"Alba is where white truffles come from," explained the billionaire. "Specially trained dogs sniff them out. Or pigs. Maybe in the future, I'll take you guys on a truffle hunt with me. I promise you it'll be unforgettable. Anywho, have a look at this fantastic learning model." The Spellbinder actually deconstructed the victory hour and the 20-20-20 formula for us. "Zero questions about how to run your morning routine now. No room for excuses. It's all laid out for you. Just run the play, and you'll own your day.